And
you do. You're very good at it.
There are a lot of restaurants in town where I go and I think, I could make something better than this.
Even a simple salad.
Yeah. We do something.
Well, I believe the hour has come. We'll commence at 5:30. We want to welcome all of you here. It's kind of nice as a look around the room when you can almost shake everybody's hand by a first name basis. So that's pretty awesome, I think. And we're just grateful to have this opportunity to meet together and discuss a few issues and look forward to it. So I think we'll just go around the room and introduce ourselves. I'm Lynn Hobbs. I'm president of the school board. So Herm, if you want to.
Herm Olson, I'm city council.
Gary Jensen, Chief of Police for Logan.
Randy Watts, the Mayor of Logan.
Red Dersh, Board Member. Sorry, I don't know.
Zane Wilson, New Business Administrator for Logan School District. Jim Lair, Board of
Dave Long, I'm with the District Office here. Russ Aquina, Director of Parks and Recreation of Logan City.
Well, Mike Desmoney, Community Development Director for Logan City.
Holly Gaines, Logan City Council.
Dean Coyle, City Council.
Tom Jensen, City Council.
Mark Nielsen, Logan Public Works.
And Yuri Logan Board of Education. Stacey Lynn, I'm the Board Secretary.
Marsha Garrett, Superintendent.
There's this guy back here.
I'm Bill Young, I'm the City Engineer.
Introduce yourself, Tracy.
I'm Tracy Cooley.
She's on the school board.
So. I'm on the school board.
Well, thanks. I appreciate you taking time to be here tonight. And we'd like to get started, so Marshall, do you have a few things first?
We don't discuss, or just go right ahead.
Between Dean and myself, actually Stacy and Dean, we're able to work on the different items. We've got them listed there. You have the first couple, and then Mike, you've got the rest, and I'll just clean up.
All right.
Okay.
Very good. Thanks, Dean.
See, as you're well aware, we've got plans for Second East in the city of the middle school, Camp North and Second East, and our concern is now that the Logan City plan has been pretty much finalized with mediums in the roadway between 10th to 9th North to 8th North. What does the school district want to do about what they have for traffic plans around the middle school? Is there anything in the offing that we're going to change as a result of what the city just set up to do? That would be our primary concern in that area.
In terms of our facilities assessment, we're looking at obviously right now we have bus traffic and parent traffic in the same circular pattern. That's not a good mix. In the new proposals, we have to have a bond election and potential year down the road. But when it is to be done on Second East, we still face Second East, but we would be looking at a separate drop-off area for parents than where the school buses are.
And that would be on the south side of the building? Or north?
That would be on the east side. In fact, if you look at the picture, the proposal for
this one here.
If you look at the open height on the first front back and then the last of the stable street, shows you some of the new bus drop that off would be basically to the north of the existing circles. You have two circles. One circle would be for existing, that would be for parking. The other would be a physical drop-off for buses over the buses.
There'd be no access off of 10th North then?
We are not looking at this point. Off of 10th North, there is a proposal for a parking lot, but there it would be a side entrance into the building similar to what it is now.
And no turnaround type thing, but it's student drop off.
No student drop off. Okay.
And you understand where the mediums are and so forth on Second and what's proposed
yes.
there?
And again, this is preliminary, so whatever we would, at the time we would do the building, would be sensitive to what the city has already done and what we do, so we're not impacting any more in terms of a negative impact on Second East. And again, we're talking, it could be upwards of 7-8 years before that would work.
And mark Second East activity in this area?
You mean from a construction?
Construction.
We're still hoping for next construction season.
next year.
2013.
Marshall, the new bus drop-off, you can enter that from either north or south?
Well, at this point, if the median is there, it would have to be a north entry.
Strictly from the north.
There's a potential, depends, yeah, if, yes, it would probably have to be from the north. If no, hopefully there would be any other way.
Okay. We have a gap at 9th North. That was always intended that buses could come up from the south and turn in to that existing circular.
But
we might have to switch, which is the bus drop-off and which is the parent bus drop-off.
That is, we still are looking, the primary thing at this point, they're recommending to play second as our primary parent drop-off as well as user drop-off. That could change.
The diagram shows no access to, was it 9th North, is that?
No, it does. There is access, it just isn't shown.
Okay.
There is access there. Yeah. When we did that parking lot, the majority of that, this is an extension of some of what that is.
And so essentially that's going to eliminate coming in from that, into that parking lot and coming up along the south side of the building for street drop off as they do now.
We would be discouraging that and giving it back over. Right. But this part here, that parking, that has to have more study. Obviously, this is just a schematic. This is just an idea. We would really have to do, once we knew what second use was, we would have a better understanding of what we needed to do on our property for the best drop-off for our parents.
Well, then, nonetheless, whatever you're going to do is going to lag what happens on second use by several years. Yes. It's not more than that.
He drops students off every day, so he
doesn't come out. I'm assuming you'll work your construction schedule to be as
friendly to the summertime as possible.
Good. I assume that. Good.
Now, Principal Monson has asked us to look at some pedestrian routing along First East, heading off to the north, at 8th yes. North and 7th North, and so we're looking at those to get crosswalks in there. But that's the only other thing I'm aware of, is that pedestrian routing.
Obviously, with the changes on Second East, that will affect how our students get from the east side to the west side. On that second piece, and leave the debate of what the recommendations of the council are. But it does mean we do have to look at a potential crossing guard at that side.
At?
To get us across at 9th, is that 9th?
9th North.
9th North, to get us across.
How many crossing guards do you have in place for you?
Crossing guards are all
along the side.
They're your employees. All right.
There are none right now.
None at the middle school. Okay. Yeah, as we're looking at the review process, we determine that there's a high probability that they're eligible for one, and we need to have the discussion whether we can get one.
That would be their 10th and second thing? Or
9th.
What about 10th and second?
10th has a stoplight, so we hadn't anticipated.
Well, you
may not
have the walk, and you don't
walk. Okay, so when you have a stoplight, then there's no need for
a crosswalk. No, not necessarily.
We do have that at Woodruff as an elementary. Also, that's obviously a much larger road. What we'd have to do is determine whether or not the student traffic warranted us to request anything more in terms of our SNAP plan to the road.
Any other comments or questions?
Did I understand that is there going to be a barrier down Second East in the middle, but it will end at 9th North?
And then it will start again and go from 9th North to 8th North. So you will have a barrier from 8th North to 10th North with a gap at 9th North.
Just enough for people to walk through, or enough for like a car to go through?
The median?
The gap between...
Oh, no, it will be an intersection, so cars can go through.
Oh, I see. Intersection. Okay.
The intent of the median is to stop U-turns and that kind of thing in the middle of blocks when a parent drops off a child and just does a U and heads off. So we're trying to get them to follow the rules rather than...
Will there be parking on the west side of the crossing?
Yes, there will be parking on both the west and the east, except where we have right turn lanes, that kind of thing, right at the intersection.
And so you do anticipate that being... heavily used for U-turn at that break in the gap?
No, the reason for that break was the buses. That's why that gap is there. That's where the buses turn into your U-drive, your circle drive.
In case of emergency, they'll say we needed to access.
Yeah, for that, for emergency vehicles, and parents will use it for that. I mean, they will make a U-turn there, no doubt about it.
So engines, ambulances could get through because of that break.
Yes.
Okay. Buses, well, they can come through.
No, they'll come through there.
But it won't be legal.
That's not there yet.
Correct.
Correct. They will not be able to access that one.
And did you say that starts at 8 North Mark?
Yes.
From 8 to 9.
Goes from 8 to 9 and 9 to 10.
To 10. And not any further north of 7. Just in front of the school.
We haven't heard that comment before.
Just one other quick question then. Where is the city bus going to discharge their large load of kids?
And that's why the 9th North is, we're funneling the CBTD bus right at just past the 9th North intersection. Yep.
So that
crosswalk will be right behind the bus stop.
And so that would be another reason for crossing. Right?
Correct. We want that to be a busy crosswalk.
Okay. Because as of now, they just diagonally.
Yeah, wherever they're let off, they just kind of angle across the road to whatever they feel like.
Very good.
Do we have a count of how many parents are dropping? How many vehicular drop-offs are we getting? Is there? There are 1,300 students. There are only 10 buses. So a bus holds 80 students. So you're looking at very close to 500 students that are somehow either on their own or by vehicles.
On most of the buses wouldn't actually have 80 kids in it, would it?
No, that would be an amp. They can hold up to 90. Most of the buses can hold up to 90. But their average anywhere probably between 65 to 80, depending on the month.
That's going to be an extremely busy intersection.
It currently is.
It'll be busier,
and it will continue to be.
I would like
right now, the sidewalk is actually on the south side of 9th North, and that makes it very difficult because they're actually physically going into the driveway, so they're having to not only navigate 2nd East, they also have to navigate those cars and buses that are turning into the driveway.
I think Tommy's creativity here is drawing a great diagram of the in and out pattern at the on your south parking lot.
I won't send a bill till the end of the month.
Okay.
Well, I'm just concerned with the congestion. Obviously, we're trying to simplify, and I commend that. But I'm wondering if some other thought, and we could talk offline a little bit about alternatives.
These are just preliminary based. This was done prior to even the discussion that Second East was having any work on it. We know that we have to have a separate parent drop off from the drop off with our buses, and currently we only have one. So we know that. Right now, there are a lot of parents who use that south, but then they are coming back out on the Second East. The biggest problem is when they're trying to turn left. Head north. It makes it very difficult.
And it's narrow, and they're sharing it with a bus that isn't a wide exit there at all for somebody trying to turn north.
With a barrier there, obviously that will mean a right turn only. Right. Once that gets to the
well, very good.
Is that going to affect crossing the light, the pedestrian slow down light? What do you call those?
The 20 mile an hour zone.
There you go. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yes.
Will that impact that?
will they stay right where they're at, or will it like enlarge the distance between the lights, or will they just stay exactly where they're currently at?
They should be pretty close.
Close
I wouldn't anticipate much a change at all on those.
Okay, that's done by a state code.
Yeah, there's a state code. And we're just moving it across the street, so I hope they'll be fine.
Okay. All right, let's move on to the next item then. I guess Chief will come to you.
You know, interestingly, I was invited to this meeting, and I appreciate that. However, honestly, I don't know what the discussion is. Now, I'm hearing some of this around the table that we're talking about right now.
Well, you know, what really kind of caught my attention when you said it's $4,000 a year for a crossing guard, mm-hmm. and we're responsible under the city to pay for those things. So, and we're asking for more, but do we want more? Do we need more? What's the criteria that requires a crossing guard? And,
well, that's a good question. There's not only state code, there's also rules. From Utah Department of Transportation that outline the school's responsibility and the city's responsibility and traffic counts and warrants and all those kinds of things. Now, I see the difficulty here is that traffic studies have to be done, and yet road improvements aren't going to be done before, road improvements will be done right around when school starts. We have to do traffic studies. In the meantime, kids are perhaps at risk and perhaps not. I don't know. It depends on how
is
they...
Is it based on traffic or on pedestrian?
It's both. As I read through the criteria, it talks about the number of students and it also talks about the number of vehicles. So, it depends on both. But there is criteria that has to be met in order for the Utah Department of Transportation's guidelines to say, yes, in fact, a crossing guard is warranted at this particular intersection, or any other intersection for that matter.
When you say the school's responsibilities, what are they?
Superintendent, jump in. As I understand it, it's the school's responsibility to create the warrant, to the traffic study, and then to say, okay, city, here's the study. There is a warrant for a crossing guard here, and then we come together and we afford, as the city, the pay to include another crossing guard. Am I wrong about that?
It's somewhat. I mean, it's not a real formal process. It has not been in the past since I've been here. Most of our current crossing guards are in areas that have been established for many years. When there have been questions, it's either been brought up by the city or it's been brought up by the district. For example, on 10th North on the west side of Main Street, it was an area where there was no way for students to get across because there was not a sidewalk. So it was determined that we would put a crossing guard halfway between the 2nd West and 4th West, somewhere on 3rd West. It was right in there for those students going over the Bridger. That has now been taken care of. I don't know if we still have a crossing guard there or not.
You do.
That would be one that we could actually review, because technically now there are two different spots that could go across safely and a safe walking on that south side. So, but one of the things that we can do is sit down and look at, about 5 years ago, we sat down and looked at where we were at that point and determined what needed to be moved. We had a question when there was a closing of the access to the trailer court on the other side of 600 West, that we had a crossing guard up there just by where the UTA or the CDTT bus area is, and we determined that process would be abandoned. And so we did, those were the discussions at that point. So it's a very fluid process. Part of it's coming from the school plan for student access. So they've determined that this is the best way for us to get our students from their place of residence to our school. And if we see if there's changes on that, then we're coming to the city and the police department and saying, can we have a relook at? It has come down to funding. I mean, that has been a difficult situation, a challenging situation in the 6 years of it.
Well, not only funding, but staff. And obviously, this is a difficult position to staff and to maintain. It's not a glamorous job. And let's face it, the worst of weather conditions and the earliest of hours. So you couple those two things, and not many people are really willing to put their galoshes on and go out and manage children at 6 in the morning. So
you have two, for example, on Woodruff on 10th West. There are two that are actually run that because there's no way for one person to physically, safely get the students across. And then on 600 West, also coming into Woodruff, we have one up there. So some schools are much more intensive. Bridger's intensive. Adams is intensive trying to get the students across 400 North. Those are some of the larger challenges we have in those schools.
Given that we will need to do a study, do you think, is that something that can be done prior to the change in the road, or can we do that based on current traffic patterns, or do we need to do that after the fact?
The problem is I see the student traffic changing, and I also see the vehicular traffic changing based on the
one going up and the other going down, maybe?
Now, I'll be honest with you. I did this in Vernal when I was out there as the chief. It was a wholly different situation, but it was largely the school. So I'm sitting here telling you, I don't know how we work together on this. I don't know if the criteria is something we have to stick with in order to be covered, or can we make this a gentleman's agreement, school district and city work together to make a safety situation for the children if one exists. I just don't know the answers to all the questions right now.
In the past, we've done that meeting.
Previously, when I was PTA, which I was safety commissioner and then the council PTA president, we used to meet yearly, do our school routes. Jed Almari and I have sat in many meetings together where we talked about each road. Is that committee still meeting?
Should be. I don't know what Jed's.
Most of it's done electronically now.
Okay, instead of the physical meeting, we actually cut a drug dealer during one of those meetings in the building, the house next door, watching the lights go on. But, you know, we used to meet a lot and we talk about those. And I know each school does submit their safe walking plan, and depending on what you've done with sidewalks, it changes.
I know the state sees the necessity for crossing guards different depending on the age group of children, i.e. elementary schools, middle schools, junior high school, high schools. There's different criteria for each one of the schools with respect to crossing guards. So you're right. It also calls out that each school has a plan and that they meet with that committee that you spoke of and make recommendations and those kinds of things. So all I'm doing is reading the black and white. Quite honestly, I don't know functionally how we bring the black and white to what it is that we agree to do with each other. So,
but as part of the design, we have the data that would be used in the warrant, and we could do our best guess as to how that's going to work with CBT buses. Instead of stopping at 10th North, they're going to stop at 9th North now. So we can take, we actually have the video of that, you know, and so we can look at that and say, yes, this is going to meet warrant, and then we can verify that after the fact. So
yeah, I think we've got a lot of data. We don't need to start and reinvent. Yeah.
And that's where we came from. It was when Mark brought us all of the information for the two-lane roundabout, and the recommendation from the designers of that recommended a crossing guard on 9th and then crossing guards for that roundabout. Having an intersection does away with, I don't think there's a need now, but it almost makes more of a need on 9th now.
Is there a more, I mean, the crossing guards we have now at our elementary schools, from the school's view, is there some areas with those elementaries that we need to ramp up something that now jumps out at you? I know we've got the middle school that definitely has got to have to be addressed with the reconfiguration.
Actually, because of the addition of the sidewalk on 10th North, that situation is actually safer now than it's ever been.
Okay.
We are looking, one of the challenges we have that will be coming up is at Wilson, when 2nd East is taken onto the south side, there's one area there that is now a stop sign for students to cross. There will be no stop sign from Center Street now down to Third South, and so we will have to have some discussion as to how do we get students safely across that street as they change the stop sign pattern. That will be coming up when that is done, which is in two years. That'll be done as well next year.
Marshall, what intersection were you suggesting that we might vacate a guard?
There is one that we need to look at in terms of the use. Is it 3rd West?
3rd West.
And 10th North.
10th and 4th. We used to have one at 10th and 4th and 10th and 3rd because of the sidewalk. With the sidewalk going in, the 10th and 3rd went away.
And so that currently is not there.
So there is only one at 4th West.
I thought that middle one.
So we've already
eliminated one.
But the ones that has to stay on 4th.
Yes.
So is the way to resolve this is just to let it go back to the to the school committees and let them work again?
I think the combination, we need to get a hold of Jed and find out. The calling that meeting, I think, was kind of a joint situation. And the person on our end who ran those retired this last summer, so they will be probably the one who will be doing the work on that. It's just another added assignment we just need to. He's not had contact with Jed since the transition. So
we could just leave it at that and let it come forward from that point.
But we do know we'll have some challenges at those, and that's the only elementary that we know of. And now the discussion at the middle school.
Do you see any liability that if we don't do it the way that the state DOT regulations are suggesting?
I think safety for the students at Mount Logan Middle School, especially with the fact that there's going to be construction even next year, I think it heightens the discussion for that 9th North crossing guard. I believe we've been eligible for it and have not had one.
I think we ought to get familiar with those guidelines, though. And
the guidelines that they were presented at the city council meeting and our follow-up was because there's a 6th grade at that school, they fall under that elementary umbrella.
This is Part 7 supplement to the manual on uniform traffic control devices. It talks about school zones. If anybody's interested, it's on the Utah Department of Transportation's website, and you can get a hold of it. It outlines the criteria. The state code that you passed out earlier talks about the actual reasons, but doesn't talk about the practicality of how to arrive at the reasons, and that's what this supplement is. So if you want to go grab that and kind of see how it makes sense to you, and then obviously us, Lee's obviously looking into it.
We have all the data to go through that one.
Do we have an incidence rate of injuries for children and people?
I don't think we've had any auto pedestrian student that have been transported.
We had one this year, but it was not. It was at a student who chose to go across in the middle of a block and didn't see a car, and that was at Wilbur, and we did have to transport that child.
But that was not a protected intersection. That's what I guess I'm
protected doing. Intersections, I have not had anything since I've been here in 2006.
And I don't remember one in 15 years we've been on the board.
That's right.
But that's because we had this wonderful partnership. You know, frankly, I got on the PTA 24 years ago because my children couldn't go to any school with a sidewalk. And then the state law passed about, what was it, 97, 98, somewhere in there, and we started this wonderful committee where we sat down, and I remember the mayor at the time, it was Russ Belstead, was really concerned about the expense of crossing guards, and they're just the same concerns you have, Chief Jensen. But it has made such a difference for the safety of our students. I still get worried about our middle school kids crossing Main Street, but you know, it's kind of there to go. But that was a concern 23 years ago when I was the safety commissioner. But it's done such great things, and you know, we work really well together that way.
It seems like vehicles respect the flashing lights, the crossing.
We enforce pretty heavily. I don't know if you've ever driven down Fourth North. I lived up there in that neighborhood up there, and would drive to work every day. And there was very few days I didn't see a police car parked at the school crossing area. So
yeah, I think it is an awareness thing, and it will become more.
It's a very expensive.
That's a hurtful one. Yes, very much so.
But and we did have those nice signs that we purchased a couple of years ago that are the more visible.
The ones the crossing guards actually carrying in his ear. So
yeah, those are better signs than we used to have. Those that are not just a cone on the street.
Right.
We really appreciate the hard work of the crossing guards and the support that they get from the police and from the city. We couldn't do our job without them.
Very well.
Well, we made that. All right. Thanks. Mike, I guess.
Just maybe a way of introduction. I think this was Holly's idea to bring forward this low to moderate income programs in the city to support families within that category. There's a number of programs that have really made a great difference to homeowners within the city. And we want to bring that forward and really for publicity purposes to let people know that there is help available. And we'd like this maybe to go through the PTAs and so forth so that people can see there may be assistance in low to moderate income homes to get financial support to upgrade their homes. And of course, that improves the neighborhood and all of that also. So, Mike,
that was one of the issues that I remember we started talking about, at least when I first came on board, that we need to keep our neighborhood strong in order to keep people from, you know, fleeing and abandoning the schools and heading out to the county and sprawling and whatever. But so we really have worked on some neighborhood improvement programs in the city, and we just wanted to share some of that with you. I think our community development department is doing a great job, and the council's tried to support that through CDBG and some other things. So
okay, I will actually cover C and E kind of together. But I brought you a packet of information. This is kind of a this kind of explains a couple of programs that we operate in conjunction with SPRAG and also with Habitat for Humanity. We've got a community tool shed, neighborhood nonprofit. Essentially, what we do each year is we have community development block grant funding go towards programs that assist low to moderate incomes households with purchasing homes, maintaining homes, and then also working on the broader kind of block improvement programs. If you look at these things, we work with Brad to provide financial assistance to folks to weatherize their homes, put new roofs on, water heaters, things like that. It's actually a real good program, helps out a lot of folks in that respect. We just started this year a neighborhood block improvement program. And the idea behind this is to incentivize folks on a neighborhood scale to upgrade their landscaping, paint their houses, redo their roofs. And the idea is to bring some curb appeal to a neighborhood, which would in fact trickle out to other homes on that same block. And the idea is to, you know, air blocks are nice places to live. Let's show some pride in our neighborhoods. And we just have done one in Woodruff here just over the last couple of weeks that has taken some real, you know, crummy looking yards and cleaned them up. And there'll be more improvements next year. So there's also a map that shows the Neighborhood Nonprofit Housing Corps, their Welcome Home Own Logan program. It shows you these houses that have been purchased by first-time home buyers. And what this program does, it's a grant program that we give out to first-time home buyers through Neighborhood Nonprofit Housing Corps that enables them to put down a down payment on a house. The stipulation is they have to live in it for up to 10 years. And if they live in it for 10 years, then that amount is forgiven. They don't take on the property and, you know, where they go in there. If they do decide to sell the house before that 10-year time frame, then we in turn recover that cost back. But it's a good incentive to get some new home buyers into some existing homes. So,
can I just, and a lot of times some of these have often been rental properties, but then are turning back into single family homes, you know, people, and again, whenever someone's a homeowner, they take care of it better, and we know that. So that map, I think, is really interesting to show where neighborhood nonprofit, how many of our neighborhoods, you know, so those are homeowners, new homeowners in all those places. often, you know, young families or so on that are getting a start, and I think it's a great program.
And we are trying to take the next step a little more actively in terms of returning rental housing. You know, the old houses have been converted to 2 and 3 units, and trying to get those converted back to single family units. It just takes a little bit of extra money to incentivize that to happen. So we're still trying to work that through. We do work with neighborhood councils. This last page shows you this is following your school district boundaries for elementary schools. Each neighborhood council's got a chair. We try to encourage them to be active in their neighborhoods. We also would like to partner with the school to be able to hand information out through the school. That's a good way to funnel information out to the kids, their parents. We want to encourage that. Now, as far as improvement programs that we're working on in the neighborhoods, we funded this fiscal year a Safe Route to School program. We're working with Mark to identify safe routes to school that we want to replace, install, improve sidewalks, essentially where they're deficient around schools, and hopefully provide that connectivity that's important for our kids in school. We also are looking at the corners along intersections that lack ADA compliance, so it's hard for a kid in a wheelchair to get up on a curb. We want to make sure we do meet ADA at that. We've got a little bit of money that goes towards that. It doesn't go far enough. So we're hopeful next year we'll get more funding that we can apply for that. We're also in our fourth phase of our Parkship Reclamation Program. And what we've done is reclaim those parkships that we converted to parking stalls, brought back curb and gutter, replanted them with grass and trees, and hopefully instill in those adjacent properties that they've got some green space in front of their house now to maintain. And then we're working on a downtown sidewalk restoration program that provides some connectivity between both sides of Main Street for those kids who have to go back and forth. So.
And how do you like Third South?
And Third South, yeah.
So that was a CDBG project, kind of a big chunk. So that should help kids down there.
And I love that it was safer for ball school when they dropped football players off.
And there's handicap access so your parents or grandparents can get into the
game. Mike, you mentioned for the ADA accessible. Do we have perhaps an identification of students that might be using a wheelchair or have accessibility problems that we could then focus on sidewalk? Or do they not use the sidewalks?
Well, most of those that are in special wheelchairs, they're being transported to school on special buses, usually through special ed funds. There's also always in the neighborhood, so you are in a situation outside of school hours where children who are in wheelchairs are trying to get around and try to mold. So the more that we have ADA accessibility, the better off
we'll be. Because I know, at least when I was campaigning, there were several people that identified several locations where they wanted. And I was grateful that we were able to get those in. Obviously, they're very grateful for that. So if their identification of students, young people that we're aware of, can we then focus on where the sidewalks and accessibility can go?
What we've done is gone to our community councils and PTA, especially the citizens person at the PTA, to say, in your neighborhood, are there areas that still need to be addressed? And that's what we've then shared with the city. We continue to do that. One thing, Mike, that I would encourage if there's a possibility, if you've got posters that you want or brochures for all of our schools, all 8 schools, to have it so as parents come in, who may not be aware of some of these programs that you're offering, we might be able to be an outlet for you to get some more information out to the
public. Sure, be great.
We'd be glad to talk to you.
Yeah, we can do that. Do we get into this in the district office, or do we just drop them off
at
school?
If you'll bring it here, we will get it out.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Okay. Mike, did you cover everything you needed then?
Yes.
Let's see. Yeah, 1200 East property, though.
I'll give you a brief update on that. The 1200 East property is a big vacant former gravel pit next to the old RV park up there by USU, owned by the Sackett family. we put together a committee to look at that. As most folks know, very contentious about what should or shouldn't happen there. Worked with the neighborhood, put together just a working group to look at that. And what we have in place is a tentative agreement that property is now under control by Wasatch Development, which is Deloitte Hanson. And the proposal, there's nothing formal, but at this point the proposal is for 64 or 63 homes on the east side, age restricted. So he's getting to an older supermarket. Well, hang on. And then on the west side, it's upscale condominiums, townhouses, apartments. Now the idea is that there's, in his mind, from the business standpoint, there's a pent-up need for senior housing in that neighborhood. So what Deloitte believes is that by providing that level of housing in that neighborhood, will attract those folks in the existing neighborhood out into that new housing, which will in turn free up some larger homes for families. So that's kind of the theory, and we'll see if it works.
Challenge we have on our perspective, and then I shared when I came to the, and we had our meeting in June of 2010, is Logan City does not have any other available land for middle to upper middle class homes other than that piece of property. And those homes are the type of homes that allow for families to stay in Logan. The area that I'm living at, they're nice size homes, but what we're finding, and this is west of Woodland, once they get to the third or fourth child, they're looking for another place to live. They're not finding anything on East Bench. They are moving either to the south to Nibley or to the north to Hyde Park, North Logan. And it's because they have the chance to build. A lot of them are not wanting to go into existing homes. They want to build. They cannot find a lot within the city of Logan.
Well, I would amend that slightly, and that is that there, correct me, Tony, if I'm wrong on the numbers, but the Sackett property was 20 acres, and Pat Hansen property right next to it over the 14 is 30 acres. Is that right?
Yeah.
So it's commercial, so it's not 25 acres that is zoned for single family.
But is this the area where they're now looking at the 63 homes?
No.
Is it above the
north? It's
north part. It's still in the single family.
Single family.
So is this the upper gravel pit?
Yes.
That he's talking about. And the drop down across from Foothill Wash, that whole parcel of 25 acres, is presently zoned single
family. So we're looking at the upper land. Having more townhomes, I understand the ability to have, but if they're not, you state the word upscale. I've seen a lot of situations where they say they're upscale and what it is if people are invest them and then they rent them out. And again, that just increases the potential for rental.
Well,
that is a challenge for us in the schools.
And it is for us. I mean, we as a city, individuals, daughters, sons come to school, Utah State, a home's bought by mom or dad to put their sibling in to handle the four-year curriculum, friends move in, parking's inadequate, it goes from single family to rental, and it is getting more and more abused, especially around the vicinities of the university.
It's Southfield Crest area.
Adams neighborhood, same situation. And we get called out many, many times on these because of violations, and it's a tough animal, isn't it?
It's a challenge.
We actually have added some additional enforcement to try and deal with some of these rental issues of landlords that aren't taking care of their properties and renters who don't. So, you know, again, with our community development, and we use some CDBG funds for some additional enforcement. Again, trying to make our city and our neighborhoods better and not letting that creep of, you know, rental get worse than it is, and trying to improve it. So
it's a challenge.
The issue is density near the university, and that's part of the reason for the compromise there on that 1,200 property, to have a mix so that we get the density near the university to pull people out of the slum areas of the town where they're living in basements and so forth, but getting into better apartments. So that's a compromise, and I know what you're saying. I lived in that world too, and so we fought it for 25 years, and we wish we could do better. But you're right; there isn't much vacant land in Logan for good building lots.
I mean, there is some vacant land west and south of the airport that's been zoned for, and the general plan for development.
And Marshall, will you bring it? I'd like Marshall. I think you're aware of the problem we have.
That land is within Logan City, but will not be in Logan City School District. As of 1998.
This is amazing.
It's a painful, miserable outcome, and absent a legislative fix, I don't think we've got a good answer for that. And property where the old Johnson Graveyard down on 6th mm-hmm. South, where the Marriott and the office building is, that property, the underlying property tax goes to the Cache County School District. And there are 16 other parcels that happens.
Right in Logan City.
Right in Logan, and it's outrageous and it's ridiculous, and we need the legislature to fix it.
All of the land that you annexed 4 years ago on the entrance on 8991, that is Cache County School District. Majority of anything that has happened along 10th West.
And the kids still come to Logan School District.
So
that's a legislative thing.
Yes, some labor. 1998, they changed.
Between city schools, school districts, when you ran that plan.
Back in 1998, a law was passed because of a dispute between Granite District and Murray District. There are only five city school districts in the state. And within those five, some are landlocked and that things had been basically calm and no problems. But Murray started annexing very lucrative property in the city of Murray, and then the school district at that point, up to 98, when the city expanded, so the school district. Well, Granite was losing tax base because of that, and was able to rally the troops in the Salt Lake area to pass this law that then impacted the other four city school districts. We still are the only one where a city still has the ability to do major annexing of the five. And if anything after 1998 that was annexed by the city is still within the county unless we've made a deal. We've been able to bring back 16 parcels back into the city school district that were in the city, but in the county school district, but in the city of Logan.
If you're Cache School District, you don't want to give up anything to Logan City if it's got any kind of commercial tax base to it. And that's the conundrum. They're more than willing to let us have the kids, but that doesn't provide the tax base. It takes a lot of tax base to justify having the kids, really. So it puts the school district in a kind of a conundrum. Do we serve the kids, or are we worrying about the school district?
Oh, legally. I mean, insurmountably. I mean, is it insurmountable?
What has to happen is
have a lawyer here.
You've got to have the school district. You've got to have the Board of Education. Both districts need to agree to do it.
I met with
the county.
Yeah. I met with Fred Hunsaker when he was there. He felt that it was outrageous, but he was on his way out. And I met with Lyle Hilliard, the guy.
You probably couldn't, bump into him.
But his response was kind of, well, but yeah, I represent part of the school district, but I also represent the county, so I can't do much. Your cause is just.
The problem is it's our problem, it is not the other four city districts' problem, so we don't have the legislative clout up here to truly get something through.
Well, it's not an issue with any of the other city districts any longer, then it would seem to me like we have a little bit of a ledge to start from.
A little bit, but those districts are hypersensitive about anything that might jeopardize this uneasy peace that is achieved since 1998. I think if it were crafted carefully enough so it didn't change the equations and the balances between Grant and Murray and some of those other school districts, maybe we could get something through, but it would take sort of a united legislative attitude here. And frankly, I haven't tried for the last 3 or 4 years. Maybe attitudes have changed.
But unfortunately, our legislative districts really overlap, in many cases, both city and county, so there's almost a stalemate created right there.
Yeah,
I think about Draxler, because we could put the,
you'd have to be stuck with doing the right thing.
With the county school district, I mean, the right thing with the justice of the county, if they don't want to do it.
So they like to get their credit.
They have been, of those 16 parcels, none of them were commercial.
No.
They would allow us to bring back homes. And the reason we felt that was important is because we had students that were continuous with a property that was brought in before 1998, and they were neighbors, and they both should be coming to our schools. But right now, the land directly west of Woodruff Elementary School is in the county. If that land was ever to be subdivided, we would have to go to the county to make a request to annex that. You would might be able to annex it in, but we would have to go through a whole process of annexation into the district. If that was to go into commercial at that corner, the probability of getting it annexed would be very slim.
And if they say no, it's no.
Is there any idea who is the decision?
I mean, on a case-by-case basis like this, who is it that makes
the
decision?
Well, the school boards have to agree. The city or the county council has to agree. It goes to the lieutenant
governor. If we don't agree,
people don't understand.
The superintendent,
not really a dollar issue,
has the responsibility to make the information.
And we did have a committee where we had board president from Logan, board president from Cache County, with each of their lawyers, and a representative from the State Office of Education, who was actually Larry Shumway, the current state superintendent. And how many times did you meet? You met for a year or more, and Herm just happened to be the Logan City School District lawyer.
See, difficult on the school side, it also is difficult on the utility side, because what happens is we annex from the county and it comes into the city grid. Now on the power grid, we have got years of backlog with Rocky Mountain being the provider, but in fact the properties in Logan. But when they need to change amp service or they need something of significant change, they're quick to drop it and say, here Logan, take it now. But it's this battle. But like I say, I still don't think it's... You get the legislators and...
You'd think.
I would think.
Yeah, I'm surprised. That
if you're Cache County School District, why would you ever go for it? I mean, they're trying to build commercial...
Well, that is blatantly unfair.
They're trying to build a commercial tax base.
But it's follow the money.
Well, yeah.
And that's what where it is.
Of all the people that should be fair would be schools.
Well, see, Kirk and myself,
they're looking at it as a loss of tax revenue to handle their students and their ongoing tax revenue.
We're getting the students that live in that area.
But if it's commercial,
you see, Tom, what we did here, it's been 3/4 of a year ago, we went over to the county school district and had to visit with them also, because we were at least talking about the corridor, which is 10th West, headed toward 2500 North, and thinking about setting up an EDA. Or, you know, it's like the EDA, we had to go through that process to talk to them and see if they would have a buy-in because of the tax situation. And see, because they know that 10th, headed that direction, it's all going to be commercial growth of some sort. Yeah, they're just hanging on to the cash cow that's going to continue to fund the fourth, their third high school or whatever.
At one point, we nibbled at the idea that we ought to just say no to these proposed annexations and let the property owners then go put pressure on the county. Say, you know, if you don't allow the property tax to transfer with us, then we won't annex into Logan, and they're after their soul. We don't care. Don't annex into Logan. We got you one way or the other. There's no leverage.
Again, on the issue of buffer fees, just our encouragement, we would love to continue to encourage the developers and working with them and having them know that that land goes into homes that will allow for home ownership and not rentals. It's an important thing for schools. That's all we need.
Yeah, all right. That's all we
get. Just so you're aware, right now the developer's intention for the apartment complex is they're not going to sell townhomes individually out, but they're going to hold those as rentals and manage them themselves. And their primary market is going to be transitional people, professors who are here on sabbatical, professors who come in and haven't found a place to live yet, working, and have their families. It doesn't help our schools as far as stability very much, but at least it shouldn't turn into a situation where we have more
absentee.
Absentee owners.
So can we just clarify again, because I'm unsure about, I was thinking that you were talking about the gravel pit. So the gravel pit area across from Foothill is
Single family. 25 of the 30 acres of that parcel.
So as you go up the hill, at the top of the hill is the flat area, that's the area on top.
Right.
So which
part? So the hill that comes down is single family.
Trader Court's under university control, that have all the traders in it, and just north of that piece of property that's still on the flat is the Sackett property, and that's the one that's in discussion now, and they're trying to work to do a mix instead of all single family they're talking about, so that Deloitte being the developer and Dick Sackett being the owner to come out on the piece when they subdivide it.
But as you drop off the flat,
it's all single family.
Into the lower portion and across from Foothill is all single family. So it's just north of the church.
Just north. Yeah, all flat, yep.
So you said part of it was, when you were talking about part of it's like condominium, and what was the other half of it?
Well, the tentative proposal was on the 20-acre site, about 8 acres will be single-family, and then the 12 acres on the west side will be multifamily.
The part right along 12 East will just be directly across from the university.
12 acres on the east will be single-family.
That would be the townhomes complex.
Townhomes, but managed under Wasatch Properties. They wouldn't be for sale.
Right.
But there'd be a buffer of new homes between where going east, between those townhomes and the existing homes that are there.
It'd be single family homes adjacent to single family homes, but they would be age restricted.
Okay, do we have any other discussion on the 1200 East property? If not, then I guess we'll go to the zoning issues. I guess, Mike?
Yeah. Really, that was more of a question I think coming from our side. Is that in the proposed zoning changes that we're looking at, some very, very extensive changes, is there anything that's being changed there that might impact single-family home areas that are currently designated that way? And that was the question.
Probably not, but it's still too early to tell. What we're proposing to do is modify our residential densities throughout the city. It's essentially 1 unit to six, or 6 units to 1 acre. And we're proposing to kind of go with a broader range so that there's areas in the city that should be zoned 1 unit to the acre, or 3 to the acre, or 9 to the acre, whatever the case may be. But for the most part, those haven't been mapped or identified yet, so it's pretty premature.
Part of that was the concern on the property just west of Sam's Club,
that hadn't been anticipated, and obviously there were some votes that, that stopped that, that to go into as many apartment-type or condominium-type homes versus single-family homes. It was anticipated that it was going to be more single-family homes than what was being proposed.
Yeah, it's
adding more to that Bridger area, which is already.
And isn't that where Mr. Johnson filed his application prior to getting it rezoned back to single family?
So the project that's been approved actually has a component of multifamily and single family in it. It's questionable whether the single family component will lend itself to providing more families for that neighborhood because they're relatively small lots.
Very small.
Yeah, so that's
just a continuation of the mess that you were talking about. Okay,
Marshall.
As we look at the potential master plan for Logan High School, the first sheet that we have, there's two different options that our architects were looking at in terms of what could this facility become. You have to realize that the front part of the building that was rebounded in the 1960s, the heart of that is an 1870 building. It is the old Brigham Young Academy. The walls are still extremely thick. They still have the pine floors. It's there. It's been masked. You can't, there's none of the great architecture that was there prior to the 1960s. But as we started looking at what could we do to that property? It's a small site. When you look at right now, high schools are on average running in 50-acre sites. This is just a little over 20 acres. What could we do? We've got the major addition that was done in 1996. We've got a good, strong gym. We've got strong bones within the auditorium, though it needs to have some major renovation. So they started looking at a couple of different options, and one of the biggest concerns was we do have the property to the north on the other side where the parking lot is currently. But get students back and forth between the two means they're having to go across with traffic. The last person who was hit, who happened to be the principal at the time on that street and did have to go to the hospital, that is an accident waiting to happen every single day. That is a major concern, having that parking across all of those students that are parking there, coming across basically en masse. So as we started discussing what some options were, this one was an option, but it would have a bridge literally over, a walking bridge, a closed walking bridge. But we started looking at what that cost would be. The discussion quickly came, if you'll turn the page, is what would happen if we were able to just walk off 100 South. What would that look like in terms of a potential plan for us? So what you see here is the one that has been recommended, and we are recommending to the board as our potential. But the ramifications of this are the closure of 100 South from 1st to 2nd West. The process on the traffic, if you can see, it would allow for a whole different discussion as to how we get our students across. We would be able to build a significant building to the north that we could then move in, tear down, and then rebuild. Most of that blue area is commons area, cafeterias there on the west side. The intent would be that the old Woodruff building, the current, we call the English wing, would go down, and the CTE building would go down. So we would become
the CTE,
yeah, the career. So with this, but we do realize that the ramifications of, and one of the questions we just have is if this is the direction we're going, is what is the process we would have to work with the city on in order to vacate that portion of 100 South?
It is on that picture, is that a walkway on the very north of the proposed new building?
That actually is a fire lane and it would be a bus access. Right now we have our North Campus building right next to the Wisconsin. It would be in that area. There would be a road that would go back, and then it would come around for potential parking or bus roundups. Again, that has not been finalized, but there would be a way to have traffic getting closer to the building. It would be blocked off so that traffic could not get through except for fire and police. They would have access, but it would be gated at a point, probably right after that that turnoff and at the entrance there off of the west side of 400 South.
Marshall, that map, I think we've had a new map that, or diagram.
And then this is one of the diagrams. This is just for an example. We have about two or three different ways of looking at it and how we would do.
Because the road doesn't go between the school and the seminary building.
This one goes around it as well.
No, we've got
three or four different ways. We're not sure whether we're going to go around it this way or in between.
Because that means the kids that would have to cross over the road to get to the seminary building, which is kind of...
Right. This, one of the other options was to take it and go between the seminary building and the Victorian home that is there on that north side. Again, that part of it. But just the intent is we looked at this, is that our best option for a major remodel and opportunity to utilize that space more effectively is that discussion with Portland itself.
Well, that Thatcher home on the corner of First South and First West.
Yeah, this is essential. This road here goes around the historic Thatcher house and whatever in the seminary because you got to have ingress egress. That has to be. You got to have a drop off point.
Like the way there's two options. One this way. The other would actually go between the seminary and the Thatcher house. So it's a much tighter turn. There's a couple of different options that have been proposed. This is one.
Is that really the case that abandoning the roadway and adding all this additional paving, roadways, and landscaping is more expensive than Skybridge? I didn't know they were that much money.
Well, the utilization.
You could build more buildings.
Well, you're getting.
We don't have a classroom there now. It's a little tall.
We actually would get more built. Under this case, we would have a larger building than we would under the Skybridge. Oh.
You know how to vacate roads. It's the council that needs to give you the yes, let's start the process.
One of the immediate things I can see is that would then increase traffic on Center as people would go to 2nd West and then down to go back to the next area. So we just have to be aware that if we stop traffic here, we're just pushing it somewhere else.
And I think a lot of people don't go in
front of
Logan High.
Yeah, the volume of traffic on that road is extremely low, except for student driving.
Because I know early on in 2006, 2007, there was some discussion about making 100 South one way, actually.
I was about to ask about the couplet study. Are we looking at First West and Second West as a potential couplet?
That part of the study? First West and
yes.
Main Street.
Yeah, it is part of the study.
But Second West would not go into Logan High.
Correct. Neither does First West go First West and First East. There's blockades at every street in order to be in Second East and Second West.
Yes. You can't get there.
Exactly.
Well, I just throw this out. Pushing east into the Ball property. Mm. I know, Tom. I'm just threw it out.
Pushing east into the
you get a lot more traffic on north-south on First West than you do on that.
Well, yeah, now, but...
I like connectivity, but I think this would be acceptable in my opinion.
There are no homes involved in terms of right there. We are not involved because there are no homes on the north side at all. Access to the parking lot for us between those two, with the exception of the Thatcher home, but the Thatcher is actually off of
version west.
There used to be a stately old home there where that new red is on the north side.
Blue would die.
The circles. Yeah, light. Light.
Yeah. And again, timeline. You've still got a long way.
Timeline is.
This would be one of the first ones, though, that we
talked about. Yeah, one of the discussions, do we do Logan High first or do we do elementary? That has not been formalized. That will be done before December. We'll be determining what our funding process will be. Earliest we would probably go out. There's two options of going out, and that is in June of 2013 or November of 2013. Both of those are.
Yeah.
One at the primary,
middle
one
school.
At the regular election. That will be some of the discussion the board will be having and making recommendations on. We know that we cannot fund the needed facilities, repairs, and improvements without moving to a bond.
What is the comparative bond level now? Is it at a fairly low rate or mid? Or
right now is the best time in the world to be able to borrow. Rates are at historic lows. Construction costs are still staying fairly stable.
Right, but what's the current debt load is what I asked.
We currently have how much left? In
$16 million
left. Our bonding capacity is $120 million.
Well, that's about $105 million. So it's a mere pittance right now what we are.
We will have that paid off in 2017.
Our GEO debt will be paid off in 2016. Our municipal building authority bonds go up about 2020.
And that's what we did remodel of the roof. So we wanted to let you know kind of that was our direction and discussion. We may be back with you on specifics on that as we start formalizing our plans.
Okay.
Okay. That concludes everything on the agenda. Is there anything that anyone would like to bring up at this time?
I did have one request that came to me from the source, again, concern about the level of Monday night activities, and this comes up a lot, and just wondering if there is some way to address this, to encourage from the school district, to encourage a night where families can not have something going on during the week, and so I was asked to bring this up to the group for discussion to see if there's what the general feelings are, if there's anything that can be done to encourage that.
Every school activity is a family.
Well, not usually.
I think one thing the general feeling amongst the board is we try to stay away from Monday as much as possible. What you say as board members is what we've encouraged, I think, and pretty much we've tried to make sure that happens, but I know there are some times, especially in the spring, as you get towards graduation and the end of the school year, that there are, it seems like there's something, three things going on every night. But I think other than that, for the most part.
Well, there were some letters to the editor, kids upset because there was something planned for Monday night for homecoming. Administration said, no, we're not doing Monday night. And there were some pretty nasty letters to both the school newspaper and, you know, and other places saying, hey, how dare you mix any church and state if you're giving a family night and, you know, the predominant religion uses that night. Then you are favoring your religion and you shouldn't be doing that. School administration shouldn't be doing that. And, you know, there were kids who were writing these letters. And so you do get into some of those issues, you know, and so that's something that we also have to be aware of.
Let me just bring up another issue that I think we ought to, in our future discussions, continue the dialogue with the rec center. and bring that on as we start talking about where that's going and what's the best direction for both of us in that regard.
I have a topic. It wasn't on the agenda, but the Riverside School was once a vital elementary school. I guess there's a timeline, Zan, for doing something different with that.
Well, there's a place you could put for single family home.
Yeah. Where now? Which? What are you talking about?
Riverside. Riverside.
Oh, Riverside.
Riverside.
Yeah, I know. Okay.
Riverside was all. It was only at one time and an annex for kindergarten at Wilson. It was going to be. It was built with just a very small component with to add on. It was never added on to the property. Is ours. I believe that they sold off four lots. Back in the early 2000s. That property, under the recommendations, we would be looking at trying to find a place for Riverside in one of the newly reconstructed elementary schools. But that then the question comes, we've had many property owners in that area with a concern. That has been a park forever, that they've perceived it as to be a park. We have been the ones who have taken care of that property. Their request has been, the city gave us parkland when we did Woodruff, and the question was, can we give the city back that property in order to continue to keep it as a as a park, and I think those are the discussions that we would have to have jointly between the two.
The neighborhood, which I'm representing, I guess, at least on a picture,
exclusively,
strongly would like to keep a park in that.
But there aren't we replacing that bridge that goes right across to the River Hollow
Park? Yeah, it is. It's across. It's across from the.
Is that bridge scheduled for next year?
It's scheduled for this year, but we're waiting for the canal, channel work of the river to be done.
So there is at least close access to a park for that.
There's a lot of emotion from the parent patrons down there because it's been there for years, and it has been their play area.
Well, let's build the high school there and let's see how.
No, we can get
in. Well, I guess. From the neighbors, they would like to, before it's sold to a developer, that the city would have an opportunity to discuss it.
The discussion we had with the board is that if that was the case, that we were choosing, recommending to move Riverside, that we would then begin discussions with the city as to what is the most appropriate use of that land.
I think it should be high density housing. Five-story tall, perfect right there.
The roundabout from.
The roundabout.
Well, that's the issue. The neighborhood would probably just buy it and make it a private park. And I think that sets a great precedent.
There you go.
Don't quote me on
that. Or either.
Call back to your concern. We do encourage a look at activities. But when you're looking at all of the things that are required and expected of a high school, sometimes trying to put that in 4 days is just absolutely impossible. But if you look at the schedule and go and look at the calendars, there's not that many things that we do on Monday. So we really do try to minimize that. So if there are specific cases or concerns, I would love for that dialogue to come back so we can problem solve those specific things.
See if they'd rather move those activities to Sunday night.
Well, I wonder if a lot of it's athletic things, athletic practices, which the coaches really control. They're going to practice 5 days a week.
We don't have gym space. We don't have field space, and depending on the season. So you are going to have some of your freshman, sophomore practices that may last until 7:30, 8 o'clock. And that's just...
But your after-school program goes Monday to Friday.
Yeah, they go till five or 6 o'clock.
Not longer than that. No. Just when the parents get home. Okay.
Well, in that case, I believe we will adjourn this meeting. Thank you for the opportunity. It's good to get together and
look forward to on occasion that we do these. And but thank you for being here, and you can go home and eat your dinner now.
We just ate
over again. Thank you, Bart.
Taking a while, but now it's the light director. Yeah, coming up. But, yes.